Drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
We're sitting here in John's tavern, and John said, "Hey, we got a beer for you to taste." I had a man come in and give me a sample, and yeah. I was a bit worried about that. I thought, "What sort of sample?" You know,
but you're not a doctor, Phil, so no, don't worry about it.
I have seen one on television, though. Now, he's poured it out for us in these rather delicious-looking tasting glasses, and I'm getting quite a citrusy, hoppy aroma.
Aroma, yes, and... Also, what I get in it is there's piney, like that.
Piney, yes.
Pine needles, that kind of a... So I think there's a hop there that imparts that kind of aroma, too.
So I guess the question, and based on the color, of course, which is it's golden yellow.
Yeah.
Well, not quite golden, but, yeah. You know...
Dark straw. Dark
straw, is that what they say?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I'm thinking this is an IPA. The question is it a double IPA? And we can only find that out by tasting it. John has joined us. We're tasting your mystery beer here, John.
Indeed.
So we've already determined that we think it's an IPA of some description.
Close.
Oh, close, he says. Oh, let's see how we go here. So anyway, Mark, well, you've had a chance to taste it? Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint.
Hang on, we've got a hint.
Oh, okay.
West Coast.
West Coast.
Well, it tastes...
What is it, Amarillo?
That should give you more of a hint as to style that...
Okay.
It might not be an IPA, but it might be...
Well,
something American.
Wow.
American pale ale.
Thank you. So that's
is what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's hard to tell that, but anyways, it. What I was going to say about the aroma and flavor marry in this one, it like the aroma continues directly into the flavor, so it's like continuation, just changes the format.
Yeah. Right. Now, John gave it away a little bit there, but that's okay. We're okay because I would say that if I had to choose, I would not have chosen an American pale ale because I think even American pale ales, I think of something like a Brixton, right, and their APA, whatever that's called, and that's got a completely different flavor to this. I would have said this was some sort of IPA. It reminds me of Pinna. Throwback IPA from Oscar Blues.
I peg to disagree a little bit.
Yeah, I knew you would, you bastard.
Uh-huh. Because I think what the difference between this and IPA is that the hops, at the ending hops are not that strong. There's that bittering, upfront bittering, but then the sweetness, and there is not this overwhelming hop character that lingers in your mouth forever. There is little bit, but that comes from the bittering hop. So I think John's right, though. I would vote for that.
I get in a lovely, at the end, a lovely lemony flavor at the end. Quite refreshing, if you will. So the big reveal. Whip out the bottle there. He's gone away to get it. He put it in the ice bucket to keep it there. Yeah. What have we got going on it? Ballast Point's Grunion.
I was thinking that brewery actually. I didn't say anything aloud, but
yeah, sure you were.
I was.
West Coast is pretty big.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now interestingly enough, I saw this advertised the other day. I forget where. This is a new beer, right? They brought this out. So they're calling it a pale ale, and I don't know if I'm going to agree with that, but hey, it's good drinking.
No, no, you have to remember now.
5%.
5%? Right. There we go. That's not too bad.
Right. But remember now one thing, Phil. We're in the United States of America, and that's why when they say pale ale, it's assumed
that... I took a wrong turn somewhere.
Yeah, you did, just like Bugs Bunny did, but anyways, and in Wild Wild Washington. Yeah. But anyways, this is American pale ale by default. And American pale ale, it is. See, American pale ale is different from English. It has a lot stronger bitterness, and it's bigger beer in your mouth. It's not English pale ale at all.
So why is it then that the Brickstone American pale ale tastes so differently? Hey, you know what? Why the hell don't we try one?
Yeah, we can always
all
do
right,
that.
Let's do that then.
Yeah.
So here we go. We've got a nice can of Brickstone Brewing. I think it's Brickstone Brewing American Pale Ale.
Right.
Now, Mark, Brickstone is from Bourbonnais, Illinois, which is down south, about 90 minutes south of Britain Yankee Pub.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Never been there.
Yeah, I think that's where the Bears actually do their training, down in Bourbonnais. I think if that's how you pronounce it, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
But Brickstone have long been... out there. I'm not exactly certain when. Oh, I think 2006 is when they started up.
Is it down Highway 57?
It is down Highway 57.
Okay, then I know whereabouts.
All right, you're a good man. And they've done an APA, which has actually gone on to a few of the lists of best beers from time to time. So I have a can of it here. Now, this is obviously part of our style of the week. Would you do the honors and open that up, and perhaps you can pour a little bit out there?
If I can make the sound happen.
Yeah, I know. We always look for the sound effect. There we go. Brilliant.
Oh,
he's opened that
yes.
up. Lovely jubbly. So you pour that out. Now, Mark, I've had this beer before. Would you like to pick it up and take a look at it and see? Now, there isn't much head, and I think that's something to do with the sample glasses. We never get much head on our sample glasses, do we?
Well, yeah, that is one reason. If you have some kind of cleaning compound that doesn't get rinsed off, that happens. Also, all high alcohol does it, and your lipstick also would do that, Phil.
What? I don't have lipstick? Oh, my God. Okay, thank you very much. This is one of the APAs that has hit a number of best beer lists. It's 6.25%. The color is a deep golden, and I think that would be appropriate.
Yes.
What are you getting from the smells? Because I almost get an IPA-type citrusy smell from it.
Yeah, you get that. And you also, the hops have a piney note there, too. So they have used one of those piney hops also in this one. So I think it's a blend for the aroma.
And they actually dry hop this for 4 days, apparently, to get the aroma up. And so give it a go down there, because I know we haven't really talked too much about the style APA. Do you have any, like, tasting notes from the BJCP guide?
Yes, I can tell you this much about that. It's you know, like, if we start from English pale ale, we switch over to American, mostly West Coast hops. That's what you're going to have. So they add the certain American character to it right away. And also the maltiness goes up. The caramel malts are pretty high, but the hops are not as high as an IPA at all.
Right.
But it's really hoppy through, but it's mellow.
Right, and I think that it shouldn't be, right? Because if I know an English pale ale, it's not very hoppy. It's more malty.
Right, right. But these are the American versions are hoppier, I would say, and also the caramel malt is more prominent, and of course the alcohol percentages go up on these ones.
Yeah, right. That's very true. This being 6.25. So, what do you think of this one?
Well, I think it's very soft, smooth, easy drinking beer. If you like the style, I think this is very good of the style.
I do. Now, there's Fist City that comes from Revolution.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember right now off the top of my head whether that one is an APA or an IPA.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that, and it reminds me of that. And I like this one a lot. This has got a lot of nice, as you said, smoothness and hop aroma, but not too much bitterness.
Well, there is enough bitterness. Actually, I was going to say that it is, the flavor profile is, it's very even. The way it starts, that's the way it finishes. And the malt is carrying all the way through, and the hops in the background. And I'm kind of a little bit surprised, actually, it is so so malty, or the malts are so prominent. Normally, it's kind of sweet malty.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's why I like it, because of the because of the sweetness coupled with the hoppy background.
Yeah, sometimes these are a little drier than this, but they probably use the caramel moss just to intentionally keep it sweet. I think it's very well made beer, and I think it is what they were attempting to make.
And the good folks at Brickstone are located down in William R. Latham Senior Drive. I wonder who William R. Latham Senior was. Anyway, they're down in Bourbonnais. We're going to have to go down and visit them, because I've heard some really good things about them. They're another one of these places that is a brewery restaurant. So, you know, you wonder whether or not they're putting all their efforts into the restaurant or their efforts into the beer, or are they doing a nice balance?
Well, I would say that if this is any indication what they have in total, you know, I think the restaurant experience would be nice too.
Some of the commercial examples that they list for the APA are Ballast Point Grunion that we just tasted, which I think we all quite enjoyed.
Yes.
The ever-present standard of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, of course, one of the first, I guess, quote-unquote craft beers. And then Stone Pale Ale, which I actually picked up a variety pack, another variety pack from Stone that had Pale Ale in it. And it is quite delicious.
Yeah, I would say that those two, to me, are a little drier variety of the same. This has really a lot of sweetness across, but it's killed by the hoppiness enough, so it's balanced and it's easy drinking.
Yeah, right.
But it's not as dry as the two others you mentioned earlier.
So John had a chance to quickly taste it. I know he's tasted the Ballast, and he's busier than a one-armed paper hanger here tonight. What do you think, John?
I am busy. I like the beer. It's very tasty. I think mouth feels very nice compared to
the Ballast Point Grunion that we had.
The Grunion. That was the sort of like the session.
Yeah, the one we tasted before this one.
Oh, yes, it was delicious.
So, give it a thumbs up for the old.
Oh, thumbs up, definitely.
Thumbs up for Brickstone.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Well, there we go. So style of the week, American Pale Ale. Pretty good.
Yeah.
We're now going to change tack here. And I went for a trip.
Yes, we did.
We bunked up together and had fun in St. Louis.
Right.
But let's not tell the wives.
Yeah, don't tell everything to the wives. We can tell something.
No, we went down to a few breweries. And, of course, one of the breweries that you have been long associated with, because you started off in this country, I believe, in the East Coast, but then you quickly moved over to St. Louis, so you were there for quite a while, right?
Right, I lived there for 20 years.
There you go. That's you're almost a Missourian.
Yeah, stubborn as a mule, right?
There you go, right, exactly. Well, one of the great breweries there is O'Fallon, and there is an O'Fallon, Missouri.
There is, and there's also O'Fallon, Illinois, and it's about the same distance from downtown either direction.
Well, O'Fallon Brewery is now I think they're still retaining their tap room right in O'Fallon, but their production.
No, there was never a tap room in O'Fallon.
Okay.
It was just a production brewery.
Well, then they've moved.
Yeah, pretty much they move everything over, yes.
So we had a chance to go down there and meet with a good friend of yours who's the head brewer, Brian Owens, and he was very gracious to show us around, and he was showing us his new equipment, which I'll go into a little bit more. It's not as dirty as it sounds. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll head on down to Missouri.
Yes, let's go do that.
All right.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Phil.
We're finally here in St. Louis, you know.
This is fantastic. Oh,
they're serving beers. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's good, because, you know,
we came to the right place.
Where did we come to?
We came to O'Fallon Brewery.
O'Fallon Brewery. And this is officially St. Louis, right?
Right.
It's
well,
not one of the suburbs.
Heights, so
Maryland Heights. Okay,
it,
good.
Yeah.
And sitting in between us, sopping one of the beers he's made, is head brewer
Brian Owens.
The superstar here now. Brian, thank you very much for coming down, letting us come down.
Thanks for coming
down. I know you've
got
a long history with Mark over there, going way back. We're sitting in a brand new facility that's, what, $10 million or something plus? And it's something new for you because I understand you started off in the one across the river. There's the old brewery.
Yeah, I'm used to brewing manually back in O'Fallon. When I started, there was a batting cage. And half of the brewery was a batting cage. The other half was a production facility. So
all right.
We had two fermenters, and we brewed maybe twice a month at best. And so we've come. It was as manual as it gets, 15-barrel manual system. And,
yeah.
And you know, now it's the learning curve with all the technology and automation, but it's a lot of fun.
Wow. And so it's really a change for you? Or is it a change that you've kind of got used to?
It is. You know, it's one of those things that I didn't know if I'd like at first, moving away from some of the manual brewing. But we still get that on the pilot system that we have now, and it's nice to have a bar and a restaurant. I mean, before we would have people pull up in the parking lot and expect to sit down at a bar that we didn't have and in an old metal shack, you know, so it's nice to finally be able to see people enjoy your product at the brewery.
Yeah, right. And when we drove up, I said, oh, this is the brewery? Because, you know, I kind of expected to see something a little more, I don't know quite what I expected to see, but I come up and outside there's all these awnings that say, we love beer. So I guess you do.
Yeah, it's a pretty deceiving building from the outside, with the exception of those awnings. Once you get in and you see the awnings, it gives it away. But we're kind of tucked away in here. We've got a lot more space than it seems.
Now, I actually tried O'Fallon beer probably 15 years ago when I came to St. Louis for a client that I had here. Edward Jones, actually.
Ah, yeah. They
own the big guys.
They own the rest of the block around
there. Oh,
they
do? Okay, right. So I was able to taste O'Fallon beers, and Mark has brought six-packs back with him and trips. So I'm a little bit familiar, especially with your smoked porter. In fact, I think we reviewed that one way back, many moons ago. You know, what has changed in terms of the beer styles that you're able to brew now with this new system?
Well, you know, we can do just about the same thing that we did in on the other system. What has changed for us for the most part is the quality of the beer. And so, you know, as we grew in the old place, we had to outsource some of our production. And the challenge was always maintaining consistency between two different facilities. But what we finally have now is total control over production here. And so we still have the capability to brew a lot of different styles of beer. As far as the brew house is concerned, we don't have a ton of flexibility for, say, lagers, but we will in the future. We'll bring in a temp-controlled mash mixer, but we've got all kinds of flexibility. It's just the quality has improved.
And I hear you put in a piece of equipment that Mark really likes. What do they call it, Mark? Centrifuge,
yeah.
Yeah, you got one of those in there, which I hear is one of the most expensive pieces of equipment you can buy.
It is. You know, it's up there with the rest of the equipment, but it's probably one of my favorite pieces of equipment as well, because as brewers, you know, you guys know that the challenge is always maintaining consistency in your beer. And we'd stand by the sight glass and watch the clarity of the beer coming out. And when it got cloudy, we'd shut the valve. Well, if we weren't looking at the time, we'd run a bunch of yeast into the tank, and it would have to settle for another day. And the centrifuge is just it's a workhorse. You set the clarity of the beer, and it does all the work, and it does it without losing a lot of beer. And I think that's, from a brewer standpoint, that's probably the biggest plus.
So being a neophyte to the big brewing process here, I mean, Mark's given me a lot of information. I'm at the other end. I'm the consumer. Certified beer consumer, Mark, you know?
Yes, I remember that.
Yes. If you have an unfiltered beer, then do you pass it through that, or you just set the centrifuge to real low or something?
That's a good question. We do. Everything runs through the centrifuge, okay. And so basically we set the centrifuge to real low.
To zero.
And
yeah,
so
right.
What's nice about the centrifuge is we can measure turbidity going in and turbidity going out.
Okay.
And so we can actually program in each recipe, set the clarity level that we want for that recipe. And generally speaking, for the most part, we'll pass the beer through faster to get a more cloudy, consistent beer. We'll slow it down a little bit if we want some clarity. So we can run almost a polished filtered look if we want to, and we can keep it nice and unfiltered as well. So it's nice to have the flexibility with that.
So you've come into this world of tomorrow, really. how did you start in the brewing business? I think you've got quite a history. I think I remember hearing you were a grave digger at one point in your life, right?
Yeah, so I had a couple of family members who worked at a cemetery, and I spent a couple of years there myself, and it was just one of those part of my progression to brewing, I guess, if you will. So I've always been a
Wait
beer.
A minute, how's that work from a cemetery to brewing?
We talk to a lot of brewers, right? Oh. And you hear, how did you get into brewing?
Yeah,
it's
right.
Usually something completely opposite of what you would think.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and so I fell in love with beer at an early age. I was a stock boy at a liquor store when I was 15.
Okay.
And I discovered beer styles at an early age, different beer styles outside the norm of light commercial beers. I got a homebrew kit from my parents when I was 21. And I was in school for business at the time. I finished college with a business degree, but had decided about halfway through college I really wanted to do something in brewing.
Yeah.
So I applied for the job at O'Fallon. I think there was a driver position available and a brewing position. And I applied for both. And I was lucky
enough. Which one did you get?
I got the brewing position.
Well, okay.
Although I ended up being a driver at times as well.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But I was lucky in that the owners
at
the time.
What year was this?
This was back in 2002.
Okay.
And so the owners at the time were doing everything themselves, sales, distribution, production, all of it. And so they were happy to have somebody come in and help relieve them a little bit. But they also wanted someone that didn't have a lot of experience to grow with the brewery. So it was really luck and timing for me. And I spent a lot of time. I learned most of what I know about brewing on the job with O'Fallon.
Yeah.
I went back and took some coursework at UC Davis and Siebel. But, you know, it's really, as brewers know, it's a passion for what you do that drives you.
Yeah, exactly. And that seems to be the overriding factor along all the brewing, the craft brewing that's grown up and has absolutely exploded in the last few years, you know, that everybody it really is a passion for them.
It is. I can tell you, if I didn't like beer, I wouldn't do this job.
Yeah.
I mean, and those that go through the tour watch brewing, you realize that it's a lot of hard work.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
we're maintenance guys and we're cleaning most of the time, but if you love beer, it's fun. If you don't love beer, it's just a job.
Why would you do a job that you couldn't taste the output from that
exactly.
you didn't like, maybe, you know?
So it makes it fun.
So you got at least, what, a dozen beers on tap here. It's a very nice tap room. The O Bar with the apostrophe on it, obviously. What is the flagship beer? What's your best seller? I'm actually drinking a cream ale because I really like cream ales.
Nice.
And this is nice and tasty.
Yeah,
and it's a good light starter.
That's our summer seasonal. You know, surprisingly, I'm still surprised to this day that our number one style and beer is Wheech, our peach wheat.
Okay. I know that one.
It's shocking to me.
Really?
IPAs are through the roof, and our 5-day IPA was our number one for a while. But Wheech, I think, is appealing to a much larger. Usually, fruit beers are in a smaller niche. But with our Wheech, I think it's just more appealing to folks because it's not as overly fruited, if you will.
Right.
So there's a nice balance there. But yeah, every day I think, really? Wheech is our number one? That's crazy.
And I noticed that there's a lot of good traditional styles on the list. You know, you've got an amber, a pale ale, you've got your 5-day IPA. I see a distinct lack of sours, which seem to be quite popular these days.
Sours are, and I think that's on the that's down the road for us. Again, we're trying to get comfortable in the new facility here.
Yeah.
I do have a barrel in the back that does have a nice sour in it. Nothing that's slated for, you know, production for sale right at the moment, but I think that there's plenty of potential for us to have fun in the future with some sour.
And I see you've got the obligatory, here we are at the end of October, you've got the obligatory pumpkin ale on tap there.
Oh, we've got a stupid amount of pumpkin beers on tap. You know, it's just a chipotle pumpkin, a peach pumpkin.
Oh, that's what she was telling, a chipotle pumpkin. I didn't quite hear what she said when she came over to serve us, so I'm going to have to try that one. I have a complete, you know, negative. I hate pumpkin beers.
Yeah.
But there are certain ones that are turning out to be really good because they don't have that real heavy spice in it, and that's what I don't want.
You know? I agree. I'm kind of the same. I'm not a pumpkin beer guy. It's our number one seasonal. Go figure, right?
Right.
And our pumpkin seems to be well-received, and I enjoy a pumpkin every now and again. It's not necessarily my flavor, but I can tell you that it's definitely one of the most popular beers we pour.
So you're looking at doing, you said you had a pilot system. You're looking at doing some experimentals then to see how they go. Now you've got the facility here to kind of have something special on tap, see how it flies. You know, now how big is your pilot system?
So our pilot is five barrels.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not too bad then.
Which is, yeah, it's pretty crazy to me. Five barrels for the pilot. So we still have our old 15-gallon system that,
right,
that we'll use for micro pilots, if you will.
Yeah.
But the five-barrel pilot really allows us to produce and package enough beer to throw on tap here in the bar and see what people think. And like you said, I think we're going to kind of step outside the bounds a little bit and do some fun things on the pilot system. It keeps us brewers happy so that we're not just pressing buttons on the same old recipes every day. It allows us to try to throw some beers on tap here, get feedback, decide maybe what will make the cut to move up to production, and maybe just to have fun and do some different things with. So we've got a few recipes on the horizon here that we're doing. We've got a double IPA right now that we should tap here, maybe hopefully this weekend. That was one of the first brews that went into the pilot. So we're doing a lot of different. We're doing a hard root beer project right now in the pilot system, which is something that's a heck of a challenge, but could
be interesting. Hard root beer. Oh my gosh, are you going to be getting it? Like, what is that one called? Not your mother's root beer.
Not your father's.
Not your father's.
Not your father's.
Right.
Yeah,
which it's exploded
through
really
the roof.
Has.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the hard root beers, you know. And again, it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I think if we're going to do a hard root beer, we ought to make sure that we have a nice beer base, and not just any neutral beer base, but a good beer base with a good root beer flavor.
So. It sounds like, you know, just to wrap up this segment, I think we're hopefully going to go back and have a look and see how the things work, what buttons you press, and so on. But it sounds like you are having to pay attention a little bit more in your business model now to servicing the bottling side of things. You've got large barrels going out to tap rooms and stuff like that. You've got to pay attention to what pays the bills.
We do, you know. And again, like we talked about, there are certain brands. Weech is our number one. It's probably not my top three, but that's where the pilot comes in,
right,
to try to do. You know, we can stay relevant, pay the beers with the bread and butter, that the beers that everybody loves, but we can also have fun with some of the niche smaller styles on the pilot. I think finding that balance is key. Because, you know, number one, you got to pay the bills, but at the same time, you got to have fun and brew some different stuff.
Well, Mark, I know you're drinking the pale ale.
Yeah, Zeke's pale ale.
And how do you like that one?
It's just perfect. Well-rounded, easy drinking, low alcohol pale ale. This is one of those beers to take home and have a good time.
I took a whiff of it. When you first started out, and I really liked the hop aroma that was coming from it, so it's going to be good. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break now, and hopefully we'll come back and find out what's going on in the back there. We've come into the brewery, and we are now standing on what you called the deck, was it?
The brew deck.
The brew deck. This is kind of like going into a brewery spaceship here, because I see you've got a large computer screen at the back there with probably touch screen, is that right?
It is.
So that's the whole new system that you run everything from, right?
Yeah, those are the brains of the brewing system area.
And you're leaning on what, we've got some pictures we'll put up as well, but... this is one of the biggest containers I've seen for a while. I'm sure they're a lot bigger in the Anheuser-Busch area, but this one's pretty damn enormous. We're up, what, another, two stories here or something like that?
We're up about 12 feet at least now. So
Yeah,
and these tanks are 50-barrel tanks, and the Lauter Ton definitely is the biggest tank we have in the brew house. This is the one we had to cut a hole in the building to get into the building here.
Oh, wow, really?
We come through the door. Yeah.
Okay. So you got a glass viewing port here. Is it? Are you actually doing something in there? It looks a little hot.
So yeah, we're probably just finishing up Lauter if we haven't finished already. So we're draining. Yeah, like Jason said, we're draining the bed before we actually pump the grain. The spent grain will actually get pumped out through the roof here and sent out to the spent grain silo. So we just finished up Lauter. We're starting the boiling process right now.
And you do you get rid of your spent grain to like a farm or something? That seems to be the thing to do these days, you know.
We do. We've got a local farmer that buys it, and he raises Piedmontese cattle, Italian beef, and we in turn buy the beef back from him and serve it here in the restaurant, which you see quite often in craft breweries, but it's nice to be able to do.
That's the beef that Mark gets, right?
That's
the
beef.
Italian
beef.
Yeah, he's got us a couple of pieces lined up, I know that.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. So this is considerably different to what you used to do. I mean, I envision you like hauling tons and tons of mash out of the
Yeah, we had tons when you're finished with it, and you know, really getting your feet wet and wearing big rubber boots and everything. You know,
that's exactly right. We had a hoe and a couple of grain bins, and we manually scraped everything out, climbed in the louder ton, cleaned it manually every day, which I miss a little at this point. That's why I'm glad we have the pilot to do that still. But it's a whole new ball game for us. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just commercial brewing, and of course, the name of the game is consistency, right?
It is, you know, and that's why I kind of fought it at first as a manual brewer who's been turning valves by hand for 12 years.
Yeah.
I was a bit against the automation at first, but after getting into it here over the last few months, I could tell you from a quality and consistency standpoint, I'll never look back.
Yeah, right. And you've still got your sandbox.
I do still have my sandbox.
That's good.
So we can still play around and have fun, for sure. Well,
let me take a few more pictures and maybe we can look at your little sandbox. You
right
know?
On, right
All
on.
All right, cool. We're in the back of the brewery right now, and I'm just tripping over this bloody enormous grey hose. Nothing to do with you, Mark, of course. But anyway, what are we looking at now? Which seems to be just a whole bunch of
crank
tanks. Yeah, a whole bunch of tanks.
Quite a few fermentation tanks. So we're in the cellar now. We have 8 100 barrel fermenters. You can see the drops above us here. We've got room for another 11. And so we've got a lot of room for growth. And we're standing in kind of the open area here that will eventually be filled in with fermenters or fermentation tanks. And like Mark just mentioned, we've got a 50-barrel brew house, and these are all 100-barrel fermenters. So we've got to brew twice to fill these tanks. But really our limiting factor in production is fermentation. And so as we need to increase capacity, we'll add more fermenters.
So you've got a bunch of different beers, and obviously you've just been finishing up your pumpkin brew. How do you cycle round and make, you know, those brews so that they're available for you? Do you have some of them fermenting in different tanks? You know, how do you do that logistically?
Well, that's a good question. And so usually it doesn't matter which tank it goes in. We typically always have four or five different brands going at once, one in each tank, basically. But we ask our wholesalers to pre-order the beer, basically, 6 weeks ahead of time. So nothing goes in tank that's not already pre-sold.
Right.
And it's really the only way to do it, in my opinion, to ensure fresh beer. And to make sure people get their orders, number one. But we were caught in a pinch a few years ago where we tried to forecast on our own what we thought the growth would be. And you don't sign up wholesalers in time, and then you end up with a bunch of beer that you have to throw away because it's old. And so anymore, everything that goes into tank is already pre-sold.
And when you say wholesalers, you're talking about distributors, right?
Distributors, yeah.
And so do you have a variety of distributors, or do you just stick with one?
We have a variety. So we're distributed in, right now we're in 14 different states.
Yeah.
Most of our sales, I'd say 50% of our sales are in the St. Louis metro area.
Yeah.
But we do have, you know, quite a few scattered over the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, you're out in Chicago, I know that.
good. Yeah, Glenn's our wholesaler. Okay. They do a great job for us.
Yep. Well, then, yeah. So you said fresh beer, and of course, you know, when you're talking about an IPA, you want to drink that fresh, you know. But there has been quite a talk about cellaring beer, and then there's always these barrel-aged beers. I don't see anything that you're doing in that area, or am I wrong?
Well, we've got those hidden in the other room, so
we've
got to get a key for that room.
The secret room.
We have a small amount of beers that we're barrel-aging right now. I'd love to expand that. Again, as we get comfortable here in the new facility, we didn't have the room in the old place. We'd have a barrel or two here and there. I think we've got about a dozen, maybe 14 different barrels right now, maybe five different barrel projects at the moment, but I'd love to expand that in.
So you are going to release those in very limited quantities, I would imagine. You're not going to spread them out in any large amount. That'll be the special beers, right?
It will, and probably something you can only pick up here at the bar. Because we have so little.
Yeah, I have a question as far as this building. Was this built to you only, or did you buy this from somewhere and it modified, or how did that work?
So we bought it. We bought it. It was a business, an existing business called Prism Medical, and they sold it.
Prism Medical?
Prism.
Oh, Prism.
Medical,
okay.
So yeah, they made
not Prism. You were sweating already.
don't bring my pasta. Don't bring my pasta.
So yeah, they made some sort of medical widget, but we left the office area up front, which was, you know, a couple thousand square feet, and the rest of it we completely gutted and rebuilt up from the ground up. So we poured
sloped floors here in the cellar, new coatings everywhere, tore down all the walls, and so we really built it back up from the foundation, but it was right. An existing business.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if you had it built, custom built for you, that would have been added another $10 million on top of it, I expect. So,
it would have, and yeah. it's hard to custom build something in just the location you want as well, and so the only real downfall to this location is that production is separated from the bar, and so you can't look out from the bar right. And see production, but I think that's why we've got all the TVs up there. I think eventually we'd like to have a loop going where you can see what goes on in production. Because
that'd be good.
As a brewer and as a beer fan myself, you know, when you go to a brewery, you really want to see what's going on in the brewery.
Yeah, that's...
Locally, which other craft brewery do you consider your major competitor?
Oh. Well, locally it would be probably Schlafly and Urban Chestnut would be considered our competitors.
That's
but
a good answer.
As brewers, we don't look at it that way. So they're our friends in the industry and in the market. And so from a marketing, sales, outside looking in standpoint, Schlafly and Urban Chestnut are probably the two closest to our size and production. Schlafly's quite a bit larger. Urban Chestnut is around the same size as we are, I think, as far as production. But we're all great friends in the industry.
That's interesting because I think also if I haven't been to Urban Chestnut, but I'm familiar with it through Mark. You know, he knows Florian, and we've tasted his beers on the podcast. He tends to do more of the European styles, right?
German
styles. There you go. And then I'm not certain what Schlafly's approach is, but yours seems to be very unique because you've got, you said your biggest seller was that wheat peach, right?
Right.
The wheat, right?
Yeah, we're all over
that's
the place.
That's a tough one to say, man.
the wheat, yeah. Right?
So what is the O'Fallon philosophy?
You know, I think as far as I see it, the O'Fallon philosophy is, in, just in my opinion, is balance. Yeah. And that's as far as I go in
that's
wrangling
fine.
Ourselves in and what we brew. So we've got a smoked porter on one end and a peach wheat.
Yeah,
now I have trouble saying it, right?
Yeah.
On the other end. So that's the thing, is that we really don't have a whole lot of limits or ceilings on what we can do. Again, the sours are an area I'd like to play in later as we grow into
the space. It's the new IPA, you know.
it's so I hear.
Yeah, so.
Do you intend to do more German beers, Doppelbock and Bavarian Lager and other brews? Right now, you're concentrating on ales. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so, you know, I think we will add a couple of lagers here in the future. As tank space now becomes available, we have the option to do that. So definitely on the pilot system. The next beer that goes in for us is a Bohemian or a Czech Pils. So we will do a lager here as the next pilot that comes out. But yeah, as far as German styles, it'll be all over the place. We're going to do everything we can on the pilot system, and then we'll see what makes it into production after that.
This is truly a really fascinating step for you to take, to come from across the river, right, in a more traditional, to here where it's all automated. When did O'Fallon start?
So O'Fallon started in 2000. It was a husband and wife team that did everything themselves from the beginning. They brewed and packaged and sold and distributed, and then I came on in 2002, and, you know, we've grown to this.
So where do you see the future going? Are you going to stay in this building and expand the other 11 tanks? I mean, that's pretty much it for the next 15 years.
Well, you know, we'll definitely expand, I hope, as we move into this space. But how long that'll take is, that's hard to say. It could be 2, it could be 10. With today's landscape and craft beer, it's hard to say, but it looks good.
It's how much beer you want to drink, right? And speaking of drinking beer...
You
got any goodies in the back that we want to taste?
Oh, we can. Yeah, we. In fact, I need to pull a nail on one of our barrels.
Oh,
so we may have to do that.
That sounds a bit nasty.
In a good
way,
though.
Let's go. So the sipping has begun, I'm glad to say, and you are giving us a taster of your Kölsch beer. Now, this is what I'm hearing, a very traditional Kölsch. What makes it so?
You know, this is actually one of our contract customers that we brew for.
Thank you.
And they gave us this recipe to brew for them a couple of years ago, and it's just absolutely a beautiful beer. And I think when it comes to the talking about the how this kind of sticks to the historical truths of Kolsch, Mark would be able to
tell us in. It does. See, when they finally got rid of the infections and all those things, when they finally got it all together, yeah, this is as good as Kolsch comes. And I said that earlier, there's a Kolsch in Cologne called Dom, and that because of the hoppiness, it would kind of measure up with that one, okay? Mostly, they're a little less hoppy than this one.
Yeah,
there are a couple that are as hoppy as this one. But it's delicate, light beer, and it has all that kind of a fruity aroma in it, you know. It's Kolsch that way.
Now, we're drinking this out of a bottle that isn't chilled. So am I getting a different flavor here than I would do if it was chilled? Because I usually associate this type of beer with, you know, being a little cooler, right?
Sure.
Well, yeah, the only thing with Kolsch is that actually it would kind of purify the flavors and aromas. It wouldn't be not as complex if it's chilled, okay? So you can distinguish the different flavor and aromatic components better if it's chilled, okay?
Okay, yeah, because we did a style of the week, which we do from time to time, hopefully every week. That's why we call it style of the week. And we did Kolsch, and we had Three Floyds Calumet Queen, which I was very unfamiliar with the Kolsch style, but I thought that was quite tasty. Now, to me, this is a little bit different to that.
Yeah,
would you agree?
This is the hops are not as rough as they had. They used some American-based hops that made it a little rough, but it still had the same kind of light qualities and the right aromas in it. It was just a little bit more robust, I would call it.
This is definitely the best Kolsch I've had all day.
Well, that's easy to say. This is the only Kolsch I've had.
I would agree with you, though, sir. Definitely.
Hey, I'm right there with you.
Now, this beer has more credentials than that, okay? This is one of the best ones in the country I've ever tasted.
There you go.
So you contract brew for a number of different companies. Which are you allowed to say who you contract brewed this one for?
Yeah, this is for Black Mesa Brewery out of Oklahoma City.
Okay.
And so we brew, right now, we brew a few recipes for those guys, but Kolsch is one of the recipes that we've been brewing for quite a while, a couple years for those guys. It's a wonderful recipe. Like Mark said, it's got a little bit more of a hop bite to it. They use Saaz in the backside of the on the recipe, so you really get that unique Saaz hop character, which I absolutely
very
love.
Nice. Yeah, me too.
Wow, that's interesting because I know Saaz as being a disease. But anyway,
spelling mistakes.
It's funny how things come around. I'm just dealing with a client in my own job who is now starting up an office in Oklahoma City. So it looks like I've got a recommendation for them.
Oh,
when you go off from work, go out to Black Mesa.
You got to visit those guys. Great beers.
Yeah.
Great beers.
Cool. Yeah. All right. That's good. This has been tremendous. And look like you've got a sample here.
Right.
That's very nice. We can try that again, right? I find this quite delicious. It's, you know, as for the style, which I'm really unfamiliar with, it's very tasty. I mean, you know, am I seeing something malty in the background there or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, there is. Yeah, there's a malty backing it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah,
that's what's nice about it.
Shame you haven't got your name on it, right?
Yeah. No, we're happy to brew for these guys.
Oh, that's good.
You know, it's hard to replicate something like this that they're doing, so we're just going to let them do it and enjoy it ourselves. We'll hold back a bottle or two and not tell them, right?
We've
got to make sure these guys don't hear this.
Oh, yeah, we don't hear this. We'll edit that out.
What's nice about a Kolsch and also an alt beer, it's one of the few German beers that are actually ales, and so you can do that here at this location.
Oh, so this is an ale.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So you get those fruity estuary characteristics. I mean, that's what's unique about the style.
Yeah,
Alt actually has less of that, I think. Alt is just pure malt and hops in its pure form. Okay, this one is allowed to have that fruity character and actually is required. I would say that Befken out of the Cologne Pilsen is the closest one that has this kind of aroma as this one has. Okay.
I gotta get over there with you one of these days.
Taste
from the source, Mark.
He's buying us tickets.
I'm holding him to it.
He's buying us all tickets when he makes a million, you know? Well, again, hang on.
When Mark
raises his finger, I know he's got something else to say.
Yeah, I think we should taste it.
Oh, that's what I was
going to
say.
We're in complete
agreement and coordination here.
Right.
I tell you, we work well together.
There you go. The wonderful Brian Owens with a very well, actually, I don't think it is an English name. It's more of a Welsh name. But he will forever stick in my mind as the Gravedigger Brewer. So. But he was extremely gracious. And the reason that we didn't really kind of finish off our interview there was because he took us to his office and started cracking open the barrel aged beers.
So
we kind of enjoyed those and couldn't get over them, right?
Yeah, we kind of forgot. We had a mission, you know.
Yes,
the mission was not complete at the time.
So, but anyway, yeah, they were really good.
Yeah, Brian and me, we go back a long time when I started, and he had made a pale ale, American pale ale, an IPA.
Actually, well, there you go. How appropriate for this edition, right?
Yes, actually, he made an IPA, and he didn't like it. Okay.
Oh, damn.
Well, I didn't even know about it too much ahead of time. And then he calls me one point in time. He calls me to say, "Mate, this," and it doesn't taste anything like IPA. And over the phone, we modified the recipe and to make it happen. So now it's the 5-day IPA, 5-day, which means it's dry hop 5 days. So that's how that was born, over a telephone conversation based on a beer that wasn't anything drinkable, he says. Okay.
And it certainly is now, because I tasted that one whilst we were in the tap room, and that was delicious.
Yeah, it's one of their best sellers. It was just funny how sometimes these beer were born.
Yeah, right,
in a
right.
funny way.
Thank you, Mr. Edison.
Right. And then also, Brian called me one day. I happened to be at home, and says, "I'm making this pumpkin ale, okay? I never made pumpkin ale in my life. I didn't know." Well, turns out when I go to brewery, he hadn't made one either. So we both were first-timers, and he made me open like 30 big cans of pumpkin puree, and I was pouring them in the mash tun, and we both were shaking our heads and figuring out, will we get a stock mash or something? How is this all going to work? But some kind of miracle happened, and it all worked, and we got pumpkin ale. Of course, I'm not one of those fans of pumpkin ale at all, but at least we
did sample it.
Right, yeah. And at least I was part of brewing the very first batch of pumpkin ale for O'Fallon Brewery, and I'm proud of it still today.
Oh, good man. Well, you know, you can be proud of the fact you did the first batch, but I'm sorry, I'm going to give the pumpkin ale a thumbs down because I did not like it.
Well, I don't like it myself, okay, but as far as it, pumpkin ale, it came out clean, it's good, and it has a pumpkin. We didn't put spices in it so much or anything. It's rather pumpkin-y, but as I said, it's not my favorite style by any means.
I agree, and mine neither, but I will try them, I guess, you know, when I'm presented with them. But you know, that's us. I mean, they are very good sellers, I think. So
anyway, thank
you very much indeed, Brian Owens. It was an absolutely wonderful thing. We've got some pictures that we'll put out on the web and out on Facebook to show. And I particularly like the picture of Mark standing next to the $250,000 centrifuge. He looks like it's his baby, you know. I know you like a good centrifuge.
I like the centrifuges because they are very good alternative to filtration, and they do a really good job on any beer, okay? So I'm really becoming a fan of a centrifuge rather than filtering beer. Because in centrifuge, you don't need to buy new filters or anything. You just put it through. If you have a filtering system, you end up buying filters all the time. It's pretty costly. In the long run, it costs you a lot of money. Centrifuge is up front, and then you just run it. So,
well, we had a good time. And, you know, we kind of needed to sit back and relax and drink our beers. And so what better to do than, as I was saying, we've introduced a stage into the pub, the Britain Yankee Pub. So our good friends who we are trying to get together with to actually syndicate our show, and I say syndicate, it's actually just let them play the show on their radio station, is the
folks. Sounds good.
It sounds great, doesn't it? It sounds like we're professionals.
Yes.
They're Railway Records, who is an independent record company down in Chicago. And the chap who contacted me was a fellow by the name of Mark Toliusis, I think I've got his name correct.
Okay.
Who said, "Hey, would you like, you guys like to be played on our radio station?" I said, "Sure." He said, because way back when we first started the pubcast, we actually played music from the Chicago area. Yeah, you know, we break things up. So we thought, what better? Now we've got the Brit and Yankee pub going, put the stage back in, and we can have some people play this week. So our first one is from his band, actually. It's called Midwestern Lull.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of like, it's going to be relaxing music. And this is definitely a piece of music that he has done acoustically, I think, and he's got some people who plays in his band. Anyway, the best way to hear it is to listen to it. And I think this is one called Time for a Friend. I may have got that wrong, but I'll correct it at the end.
Okay.
There were birds in the attic, it was cold outside, and the leaves had all fallen when I died inside. And the farmhouse was empty, no echoes of you, and the work was all done, nothing else to do. There's a ghost in the bedroom, there's a voice down the hall, and they come here to listen, and they pass through the wall. And the fields are all silent, and the lake is still, and the owl is starving, never made a kill. But it's sure good to see you, man, it's been a long time, never meant forget you, you're a friend of mine, you're a friend of mine, you're a friend of
more to say, but it's sure good to see you, man, it's been a long time, never meant to forget you, you're a friend of mine, you're a friend of mine, you're a friend of mine. The dreams will come true when you don't even notice it's right in front of you. Now I can't take for granted all the love that I feel. This euphoric nostalgia, it seems so surreal. And it's sure good to see you, man, it's been a long time, never meant to forget you, you're a friend of
So there we go. That is Midwestern Lull with Friend of Mine. So I hope you enjoyed that, Mark. And
well, I did.
And we'll have some more bands. Now, I'm looking for all sorts of different types of music. I mean, hopefully they've got some heavy metal and rap and all the rest of it. We want the gamut, right?
Well, for heavy metal, you have to call Finland, you know.
Oh, yeah, they are pretty heavy metal, aren't they?
They're heavy on that, yeah.
Well, this has been an exceptionally interesting show because we've gone from Star of the Week APA all the way to Bourbonnais, and then from Bourbonnais down to St. Louis.
Right.
And the only thing that I have to say is, based on the music that we've played, is that I'm glad you're a friend of mine, and all I have to say is it's good night from me
and good night from him,
and of course. Cheers. Oh, what a lovely clang.
Yes,
thank you. That's
I picked the right kind of glass.
You did, that's right. A full one.
Yeah, well, wait a minute, half empty.
Hey, you know about half empty versus half full, don't you?
Yeah, I know.
The good thing is that if it's half empty, it can always be filled up again.
Right, exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Are we done?
Yeah, we're done, I think.
I'm bloody exhausted.
Right, yeah. This
and now
talking.
I've got to break down all the microphones on the stage. It's ridiculous.
I have to cool down with the beer.
Oh, that's a good idea. Right. Oh, will you pour it over me?
Yeah, please. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Splash. Britain Yankee.
Britain Yankee. I'll have a pint. No, give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
A pint, please, Bob. Give another pint, please, Bob.